In the middle parsha of Vayigash, first of all, the beginning of Vayigash builds up almost to a crescendo. What we have is the tension that's been building up the last couple of weeks finally brings us to this moment of revelation when Yosef reveals himself to his brothers. And in the aftermath of the revelation, a couple of interesting things happen. One thing which was, I'm not going to say inevitable, but it's just interesting the way that Yosef plays it out. And that is, he brings his family to meet Paro. So, you know, maybe in a sense you can say that his new family has been Paro and the royal court and introduces them to his old family. But there seems to be that Yosef gives a great deal of thought exactly how to go about doing this. In the first source, Perek Mem Zayin, which is in Parsha Vayigash. You got it? It's Pasuk Aleph, Vayovo Yosef v'yaged l'faro. Yosef comes and he tells Paro, v'yomer, avi v'achai v'tzonam v'karam v'kol asher lehem bo'u mi'eretz Kanaan v'inam b'eretz Goshen. They've all come from the land of Canaan and they're in the land of Goshen. Now, again, Yosef has given thought to this. He instructs them what to say and what to do and how to act and where to go. And again, Yosef, who is probably the most impressive strategist in all of Tanakh. I mean, I don't know anybody else who is just I've said this in previous years, and you can attest to it if you said you've listened to 300 classes. I said, Yosef is certainly the one person one would not want to play chess against. It just seems to be that Yosef sees in front of him multiple steps and knows. I don't know if it's intuitively, I don't know if it's intelligence, I don't know if it's his belief in interpreting dreams or symbols. But Yosef sees and knows how to do it. And from this whole episode, you realize it's not just the dreams. Yosef tells him what to do, what to act, how to say. And so let's be very careful in how we read it, because Yosef was very careful on how he set it up. So he tells them that they've arrived, but they're in the land of Goshen, which you realize, as far as we understand the land of Goshen, which is not really part of the land, or it's on the outskirts, the suburbs, or it's not part of the Egypt proper. So there's almost this halfway interaction between his brothers and Egypt. On the one hand, they're here. On the other hand, they're not really here. They're in the land of Egypt, but they're not in your face, as it were. So now you have homework, is to take out your map. Yeah. Last week, I actually took out a map to look up where Dothan was. I found Dothan. Anyway, Pasuk Bet, Umiktse Echav. Miktse most likely comes from the word ktsat, some. How does your translation translate it?
From among his brethren.
Umiktse echav lekach chamisha anashim. Well, Art Scroll. I know. Who am I to argue with Art Scroll? But we'll see. To say miktse means from the least of his brothers, you would have to then, again, let's just focus on the word miktse first. The word says umiktse echav lekach chamisha anashim. From amongst his brothers. Now, the word ketz can also be from the end. Umiktze echav l'kach chamisha anashim. Yosef brings five of his brothers. Vayitzigim lefnei paro. What's a hatzagah? Yeah, he presents them in front of Paro. Now, the first thing you have to ask yourself over here is why. The second thing you can ask yourself is which five? But once you know the why, then maybe getting to the which five will be easy. There is probably no way for us to ever know which five he brought. There's also a complete lack of agreement as far as why he's doing this and what the motivation is. And really, commentary is going mikatze lekatze, as it were, from one side to the other to try to figure out what Yosef is doing. Rashi conveniently gives us both opinions. Mutually exclusive, contradictory opinions. Umikze echav, Rashi translates, min hapichutim shebahem, from the inferior ones, which will be the motivation for the art scroll translation from the week. And you have to be very careful because some translations, including the art scroll Rashi will, in the English on the top of the page, not just the bottom of the page where they translate it, it's good you came, we're talking about art scroll now, that in the top of the page, they will translate the text as per Rashi's interpretation. So therefore, when you read the English translation on the top, and then you read Rashi, you say, what did Rashi add over here? It already says in the text. Well, guess what? It doesn't say it in the text. And they do the same thing with the art scroll Ramban. So therefore, the English on top of the page has now been a new English translation rendered based upon the particular commentary that they are offering forth. Okay? So over here, we just, again, have to be careful. And that's why your translation is actually a little bit better, because it says umikze echav, means from amongst the brethren. It's a little more neutral. But it's something that we all know. Every translation is, in fact, an interpretation. And any of you who have any attempts of becoming serious Bible scholars will not do this unless your Hebrew is sufficiently good to be able to translate by yourselves, because otherwise you're at the mercy of whoever's translation you have to be reading. Minapachotim, Rashi says, Minapachotim shehem ligvura. So it's not even how did that, again, your translation said the weak?
The least.
Now, so the least is not even what Rashi's saying here. Rashi says he lined up all 12 of his brothers. The way he lined them up was from the strongest to the weakest, and took the weakest 5 with him. Okay? Minapachotim shem legvura she'ein nir'im gvarim, giborim, the ones that do not look like they're strong. She'im yir'eh otam giborim, because if Paro were to see the strength of his brothers, yaseh otam anshei milchamato, he'll make them part of his army. So there's a long tradition of Jews trying to avoid the draft. Here you have, according to Rashi, one of the earliest instances. And then he gives us the list, and Rashi's list is a little surprising. The Elohim, and these are they, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yisachar, Uven, Yamin. Now, why do you find this list amusing? What? Oh yeah, Shimon and Levi seem to be a tough group. Shimon and Levi are the ones who wiped out the city of Shechem. I was about to say Saba and Shatila. Okay, they were the ones who wiped out Shechem. According to biblical interpretation, it doesn't say in the text, they were the ones also who were the most involved in the sale of Yosef, because they're the ones who one said to his brother, and they claim that's Shimon and Levi, and said, let's kill him. And they seem to be short fuses and sharp weapons. So it's very interesting that we find them here. Now, another question would come, how does Rashi know which one of the brothers looks strongest or weakest? I mean, did Rashi see their Facebook? I mean, how exactly does Rashi know this? They don't even know what I'm talking about. Good. What?
Was it strength of body or was it strength of mind?
She'in nir'im giborim. The look, yeah. They give, and it's not even the ones who are really strong or weaker. The ones who give the impression of being least strong. That's who he chose. That's what Rashi says. And of course, what we have to ask ourselves is why? Shimon and Levi.
It doesn't make any sense. I
think I raised that. Shimon and Levi, you don't agree. Okay. Okay? Good. Okay. And then Rashi adds, Otam shelo kafal Moshe shmotem kishabirchem. These are the ones that Moshe did not repeat their names when he gave them the bracha. Now, to get any clue to what Rashi's talking about, you have to go, and again, this can also be your homework right after you look in your maps. You can go and take a look in Sefer Devarim, where Moshe gives the bracha, when he gives the blessing to the various tribes. Some of the names are repeated, and some of the names aren't repeated. Five of the tribes are not repeated. Seven of them, therefore, are repeated. So in Rashi's first interpretation that he offers, he says, right, the ones that he did not repeat, Aval Shmot Hagiburim Kafal, the ones that are stronger are the ones that he repeated. Vizot Luyuda, Shema Hashem Kol Yehuda. So in the Brach of Yehuda, the name Yehuda is mentioned twice. Ulagad Amar, Baruch Marchiv Gad. Ula Naftali Amar, Naftali, Ildan Amar, Dan, Vechen Luzvulun. Rashi then adds and says, this is an interpretation which is found in Bereshit Rabbah, Shehi Agadat Eretz Yisrael. This is very, you're already making faces, this is very unusual. Very unusual for Rashi to make such a statement. He goes, this is the approach that we find in a Midrash, which has been preserved and passed on and taught and maybe even introduced in the land of Israel. Aval b'Talmud Bavlit, but the tradition that comes out of Bavel, Aval b'Talmud Bavlit Shelanu, it's also interesting how Rashi says, because the Talmud Bavli is the more authoritative in terms of halacha, Matzinu she'otam she'kafamu she'shmotam hei machalashim. The Gemara tells us the ones the names were repeated, they're the ones who were the weaker ones. Votam hivi lefnei paro, and the weaker ones were the ones that he brought. V'yehudal shuk pal shemo lok pal mishum chalashut. Ela ta'am yesh b'davar kiti ita b'babakam. Now there's another reason why he was... Now this Rashi is a little confusing. First let me tell you what he said. He said there's two ways of looking at it. And by the way, what did Rashi understand? That five of the 12 brothers were separated. There must be some reason that the five out of 12 were separated. What's the reason? We can guess. He goes searching through Tanakh to find a place where there is a distinction between five versus the others, and he comes to the conclusion that over here, by the blessing of Moshe, we find different treatment for five of them versus seven of them. But what's the question? The question is, which is the five that he brought? Now, that should be real easy, which sounds to be why that's Rashi's first interpretation, even though it's from the Eretz Yisrael that he may not want to include it. But I do have to stress again, Rashi many, many times gives two interpretations without telling us where they came from geographically, without telling even the sources of them. The brilliance of Rashi is the way that he weaves together sources. Over here, this is completely out of character what he did, and maybe we will figure this out as to why he may have chosen to do this. The first interpretation is a little bit easier, because the five of them, again, what do those five have in common? That he did not repeat the names. Shalokafal. Why is that easier? Because he repeated the name of seven of them. So if there are seven of them, so he already... So there are seven of them. So of the seven of them, one of them he takes away without telling us he took it away, and that's Yosef, because Yosef... he doesn't count, and then you have a problem, because Yehuda's name is repeated, so therefore he says, no, Yehuda's name is repeated for none other reason, and he just makes reference that there's a Talmudic source that supports him. And that's the two different approaches. Whether he brought... So the question is, which of the names who are repeated? Correct, the weaker or the stronger ones. The Maharsha explains the Gemara, which I didn't bother to quote, Midilok tiv ume achav lakach, dorshu de miktsat echav, mashma hapachutim. That the word miktse, sounds like the lesser ones. The hamuktsim ligvurashaban. And then he says, "Luzeh Amar Shehein Hayu Otan Shenichfalu B'Shemot Hayu Tzrichim Chizuk B'Virchatan." Those whose names were repeated, they needed additional strength, and that's why their names are repeated. The Maharal, source 4, Pirish Kol Kafal Hu Lachozek Ulakayem Kamo Sha'amru Shana La Vakatuv Lakev Areiki HaKafal Hu Lachozek Adavar. It's very similar. L'cheinu Kfar B'Makom Hazeh L'Shikpil Hashemot Hu Lachazek Otam B'Tfilato, to strengthen them in Moshe's prayer. U'me'acha she'ratza lachazek otam b'tfilato, im ken chalashim hayu ba'atzmam el HaKadosh Baruch Hu chizek otam. U'v'yushalmi savar ipcha, ki otan she'chpalu giborim hayu, u'lachen kafal shimam ki kafal morea al hachozek. The ones that are repeated are the ones that are stronger. So, right. No, but he's working off of Rashi. He's just explaining Rashi. Source 5 is the Bereishit Rabbah that he's getting it from. And here he lines out who those 5 were. And as I said, this is the source of Rashi. In Source 6 is a Zohar, which I made reference to last class, 2 weeks ago. But I'm not sure if I quoted it inside or not. The Yosef Hatzadik Nami Avad Hachi Umiktei Echav Lakach Chamisha Anashim V'Yatzigim Lefnei Paro Man Inon Chamisha. Who are these 5? Inon Delo Sanile. Those are the ones that didn't hate him. Ahu Dichtiv V'Hunar Et B'nei Bilha. So who are the 5 according to the Zohar? No? So who are the 5? The four would be obvious. Who are the 4? 4 of the 5 are the children of Bilhah and Zilpah. Who are they? Gad, Naphtali, Dan, v'Asher. Who's the 5th? So he doesn't tell us. Is it Binyamin? That makes a great deal of sense. Is it Reuven who tried to save him? Is this connected to that previous episode? Right. So over here, it doesn't sound as anything to do with strong, weak. But what's the issue? The issue is who can you trust? Right? Who are you going to put on in front of your boss? You're going to put somebody who you think is a better chance of that you could trust them. You don't want them to say something which may be inappropriate. The Radak in 7 says he understood the sources differently than you did before. He says umiktzei echav achar shegid leparo shalach lechav lekach miyem chamisha hapechutim mehem o hagedulim mehem. Either he took the weakest 5 or he took the strongest 5. Because the rabbis really don't agree on this point. So now we have complete clarity as far as who Yosef said and the criteria. So let's think a little bit about what Yosef is thinking. This is maybe the only way that we can really get into this. The suggestion of that he's afraid of using them in the army, again, I don't want to discount the Midrash, I don't want to discount Chazal, but I do want to ask a different question. Is it necessarily Pshat? Which means, what is the Pshat over here in terms of this verse? What is Yosef thinking? And let's go back, maybe we'll go back one step. When it's revealed that Yosef's family has come, what's the response in Egypt? The response is that they're happy, and then you have to ask yourself a simple question. So why are they happy? So let's look at a source, source number 10, the Tzur Hamor. I provided you with biographical information over here. Avram ben Rabbi Yaakov Saba, born in Castile, and his granddaughter was the wife of Rabbi Yosef Karo, if that helps you. V'mar v'yama paro Yosef, avicha v'achecha bo elecha, achar sh'amu lo Yosef, aviv v'achi bo'u laharot sh'samach paro b'v'yat aviv v'echav, ad sh'kimat lo yamamin adavar, which is a very strange thing. He was so happy, but he almost didn't believe it. Now, why did he almost didn't believe it? So let's just think about it. Yosef is a man who enters Egypt with no identity, right? Yosef comes in with no identity, or the identity that he has is a very questionable identity. Ulechein amar ha'im ze emet shavicha v'achecha ba eilecha. V'ha'yazel afisha Yosef marler paro shulo av v'achim nechbadim ma'od mizera Avraham. He informed them, which is very strange. Now, for the first time, they do the background check. Or maybe he had told them all along, but it sounds that now is really the first time that he tells him, oh yeah, by the way, I am a descendant of Avraham. Now, we do have to remember something. There is a possibility that Avraham has left some kind of an impact on Egypt. Avraham visited Egypt. Avraham caused a little bit of havoc in Egypt. Avram caused an impression on Egypt. Avram left Egypt with a great deal of wealth. Avram, as I said, he within the annals of Egyptian history, it's possible that Avram was somebody that was known. I did see one commentary that even tried to claim it's the same Paro still, but I find that a little difficult. Correct. Well, let's move on. Correct. V'shelo haya eved, kimo shayu omrim lo avadav. Shahaya eved shekano rabo, besrim kesef, v'she'in ru'i l'mloch aleihem. So now we're hearing for the first time that there may have been an undercurrent of negative attitude against Yosef. Who is this Yosef to be ruling us? Who is this Yosef? Who is he after all? He's a slave who was bought by the house of Potiphar. How in the world is it appropriate for this man to be ruling over us? Ulekhein amar umiktzei echav lakach chamisha anashim mehayoter giborim veyoter nechbadim v'midam lefnei paro la'amet dvarav harishonim. Which means Yosef has an agenda over here. And by the way, I don't have to, you know, give points to the various commentaries, but this rings very true. This comment over here is that Yosef has a need to establish his identity once and for all, and he wants to show that he too comes from an illustrious family. Perhaps even we can consider the Abraham family a family of royalty. So who is he going to show? Is he going to show the weakest brothers, or is he going to show the strongest, most illustrious brothers? And the other question you have to ask, why not bring all 12 brothers? Because 12 would also be making, certainly making an impact. Ulechein samach paro, because paro has an investment in all this. By the way, have you realized something? The first scene where Yosef meets paro, paro has his dreams, he's the king of Egypt, he meets Yosef, paro disappeared from the rest of the story until now. Where's Paro? Where's Paro? What? Well, Paro's doing what Paro... Yeah, he delegated. Yosef's running the show. He's in his harem. Yeah. He has an extended vacation. The guy who's running the show is Yosef, which means he has something invested in Yosef, because Yosef is the person who's running it. Yosef is... I mean, we'll see a little bit more about this relationship, but Paro has something invested in it. Who are the people who have been displaced by Yosef? This whole group of advisors who we hear in the very beginning had given suggestions, and all their suggestions were shot down. They may still represent this undercurrent of negativity against Yosef. So it's within Paro's interest and within Yosef's interest to present in front of him his illustrious family, because that will make Yosef look like royalty as well, or certainly not as a slave. Correct, and that's exactly what he says. I guess what it's saying is those who look more impressive versus those who look less impressive. You have people that make better impressions. No, no, no. As I said, that was just something suggested by the Zohar, the ones that liked him, which is a whole other way of looking at it, that he's very concerned about what they could say. But over here we see from the Tzur HaMor, I think a very strong argument as to why Yosef would put forth the most impressive of his brothers in order to try to establish his own, in order to strengthen his own power base. I don't know. Your great-great-grandfather. I don't know.
Well, I don't understand. It's like, I'm trying to picture this in terms of our days. Like, okay, the guy is in this ruling position. It's almost like this Obama guy. Where did he come from? I mean, I hate to say it. That's what's coming to my mind. Like, all the things that we saw, you know, politically saying, who is this Obama? He just came up. He's ruling the whole country. We don't know his family. All of a sudden, he has this family.
All right.
I mean, while he was ruling till now, everything's going fine. Nobody bothered saying, I wonder
let's continue. That's good. That's a very strong point, because there was actually a cover-up. So we'll get there. And there was a cover-up, and there was a conspiracy. By the way, I'm talking about Yosef, not about Obama. Okay? Well, I mean, I'm not specifically speaking about Obama. I'm aware, unaware. I know what you're going to talk about Friday night. As I said, I know what you're going to say Friday night. Ulchein, Samach Parov Amar Avicha Vechichabo Elecha. Ulezeh Amru Zal, the rabbi said, Shamar Lamala Behisvada Yosef Elecha Vayitav Hadavar B'nei Paro. And that's why it said in the text right away, when a cry was heard without Paro, and Paro and his avadim, avadav, his servant, the household, liked this. Vayitav hadavar b'nei Paro v'nei avadav. V'lo amar, but it didn't say kol avadav. It didn't say that everybody was happy. Kimosha amar lamala b'chalom Paro, v'yitav hadavar b'nei Paro uv'nei kol avadav. Now that's a very interesting comment. Let me just translate. There are two different verses that he compared just now. And this was the second really interesting thing that he brought up. One verse that he's making reference to is in Source 11. Let's take a look. It's in, again, in Vayigash, Perek Mem Hei Pasuk Tet Zayin. Vakol nishma beit Paro, and the voice, a sound was heard in the house of Paro, Lemor, saying, Bo achei Yosef, the brothers of Yosef have come. V'yitav b'nei Paro v'nei avadav. And this was seen positively in the eyes of Paro and the eyes of his servants. Now over here it says, uvenei avdav. If you compare that with Source 15 for a moment, where it's bolded, which is back in the beginning of Parshat Miketz, Perek Memalev Pasuk Lamed Zayin, it says, this is when Yosef makes his whole presentation, vayitav hadavar b'nei Paro uvenei kol avadav. And the thing was seen in a pleasant way, in a good way, in the eyes of Paro and the eyes of all of his servants. You notice there's one word difference between the two. So the Tzmar points out, again, very, very cleverly, he points out, well, the acceptance of Yosef's, of the arrival of Yosef's brothers, is not seen in the same way as the acceptance, as the first time that it says, and we'll have to see what that first time was, exactly when it says, but in an earlier scene, we're told that Paro and all of his servants are crazy about this particular idea. Let's continue in the Tzur HaMor. Avol bekan lo samchu kulam. Not everybody was happy. Otam she'amrusha Yosef Eved. Namely, those who were claiming that Yosef is a slave. Which means that those who were sticking to this concern in terms of Yosef's lineage, they don't want it to be proven true that Yosef comes from an illustrious place. So it sounds to be that because they have something at stake over here. What do they have at stake? Yeah, the position is that basically Yosef came in, pushed them all aside, and Yosef usurped all the power. Yeah.
Can we assume that because the Passover, the great Passover, only the priests were
can assume that Yosef's actions in Egypt serve as the foundation of the later anti-Semitism that emerges. I mean, there is definitely a link. The anti-Semitism in Egypt. Later on, for all that it's going to, you know, the argument, a new king that doesn't remember Yosef and so on, is it the same king, no king, whatever. It's Yosef changed the economy of Egypt. Yosef saved Egypt, but he definitely changed the economy. And there's no question that there was a great deal of impact to a great deal of people. And now the question is, and how do these people look at it? Yes, you saved our lives. We're all alive. We're all on welfare now. And now a central body owns all of the private property, has now become property of the king. How do you think that they took that? I mean, it doesn't sound that there would have been a great deal of joy involved in that. Because again, after everything is over, 5, 10, 20 years later, there's no more famine. But guess what? You don't own land anymore. You were just bought out. Your mortgage was canceled, and now the banks own all the properties. There was certainly an impact, an incredible economic impact that Yosef caused in Egypt. As I said, he saved them. If he wouldn't have done what he did, Egypt all would have died out. Right? It would have been wiped out because there would have been no food. But on the other hand, you have to wonder about that part of the plan, why it was necessary as well. It was something which was very self-serving and probably caused Paro to like him even more. Paro became a very wealthy man because of Yosef. Let's continue. And then he says something which is fascinating that we need to look into a little bit more. Go a little bit further down where it's underlined. Acher Sheparo Hayakimo Ben Liyosef. We're still in source 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 or so lines before at the end. Acher Sheparo Hayakimo Ben Liyosef. So we'll have to see exactly where this comes from. The relationship between Paro and Yosef, he's calling it a father-son relationship, whereby with Yosef the father, we'll see exactly where he gets it from. There's actually a number of indications of this, not just one. There's a couple of indications. We don't know Paro's age. We also don't know his emotional or intellectual capacity. We do know that Yosef comes in as an incredibly talented. Again, the talent of Yosef is obvious to everyone who meets him. Every place that Yosef arrives, he immediately rises to the top. Everybody sees this, except for maybe his brothers. Right. I actually saw Rabbi Soloveitchik quoted, I saw this recently, as saying they saw it as well, but they thought that leadership should not be based upon charisma. Now another thing that you're going to say, that leadership based on charisma is very dangerous leadership. Leadership has to be based on substance. And he said Yosef must have had a great deal of charisma that anybody who meets him immediately plays with that. But the other thing about Yosef, he also has substance. I mean, that's the thing. That we can argue. I mean, already from the beginning, his father, from the beginning, he's called the Ben Zikunim. And the Ben Zikunim seemed, again, as we went into this a little bit a couple times, it seems to be somebody of wisdom. He has wisdom. Whether he's smart or not, there's something else, but he has wisdom. So he says, Acher Sheparo Hayakimo Ben Liyosef. Now, again, could you justify this statement? Yeah, Yosef is the advisor. Yosef is telling him what to do. Yosef is the... Excuse me? Correct. Exactly. We'll see that. Exactly. We'll see that in a second. We'll see that in a second. Ach shapar yakumo ben li Yosef ki dichtiv. Right. Next couple words. Vayikru lefanav avrech v'ktiv yasimenu la'av leparo. And he says, he later on, he says, I am like a father to Paro. Yosef says this. Which means, this isn't the Tzurim or making this up. He's called Avreich. The question is what Avreich means. One suggestion is Av b'chokhma rach b'shanim, which is where the term Avreich comes from today. But he says later on, I have been made like a father to Paro. Im kain Yaakov haya kamo avi aviv. Yaakov, now when he arrives, will immediately assume the position of grandfather of Paro. Which is, I would assume, something that you never occurred to you. Because when Yaakov comes in, what's his relationship with Paro? So he says, no, that's kamo avi aviv. V'ra'ui sheyavrechu, and that's why he's going to bless him. V'zehu v'yavrech Yaakov et Paro. And that's why Yaakov is blessing him. So now, the Torah Mora just turned everything around, but he gave us a lot more insight in terms of the, what would be the proper word, the intrigue, the palace intrigue, which may be taking place. Which means Yosef certainly has a great deal of control. Economically, he's made incredible differences, but that doesn't mean that there's not going to be an undertow which is going to attack him, again, and not because of what he's done necessarily in terms of the palace, that's outside it, that's later on, but rather because of his position of leadership. Who in the world is this person that he has the right to lead us? He's a slave after all. So we're going to look and see a couple of things that were done in order to try to anticipate and take care of this problem. Yeah. Correct, and I think that I agree with you. So I also had that thought go through my mind. How old is Paro? Is Paro a 10-year-old, 12, 15? I mean, how old is Paro? But again, the way that the relationship is described, either you can ascribe it to Yosef's incredible intelligence and insight, or you can couple that with Paro's insecurity, which may be due to his age, that he's young, and now he gives the keys to Yosef and run the show, and he's off frolicking about as young leaders tend to do. I mean, along the same lines, when Yosef's brothers come, and again, I'll just touch this a little bit. In the Alsha, do we want to see? Who do we want to see? Look at the Ramban in 12. Yosef's brothers come. Ki Yosef magid lebeit Paro ki yesh lo achim nechbadim ba'aretz avrim ki ganav gunov b'shem. Yosef told people that he has very illustrious brothers and he was kidnapped. What he may not have told them, there may be some selective reporting going on over here. Va'atashem uki bo'achei Yosef kasher amar. Now, I mean, Yosef all along had said, I was kidnapped, that's why I ended up where I ended up, and now his brothers are coming. And they were very happy. They were really embarrassed. Again, first of all, he's a stranger. Second point, Eved, Mibeta Asurim, Yotzolim Loch, ex-convict, comes out to rule. Again, he is a stranger. Right? Never underestimate xenophobia. He's a stranger. He's a former slave. He's an ex-convict. Again, not necessarily. And a heretic. Not necessarily, well, we'll see about that as well.
But another thing that just occurred to me, there were people who watched these Buddhas come in the first and second time, and he didn't say they were his brothers.
Right.
Well, all of a sudden, it's not like, okay, so you said, you know, I was kidnapped, and now my brothers found me. But what about the people who witnessed these people coming in, and Yosef was there alone with them?
He probably surrounded himself with people that he can trust.
How many people can trust?
Okay. Good. It's good.
There could be people talking about it. I remember when I was saying these guys came in and he acted like he didn't know and all of a sudden.
I think you're correct in the direction that you're thinking, that this is something that he has to be concerned with all along the way. What are people thinking? What are people saying? Who he really is? Source 13, and to Medrash, the Sechel Tov writes, Shayu Savur She'enu Miyuchas. People would say, people thought, this is why they were happy, people thought he was not Miyuchas. Kevin Shidasha Bolo Achim Hagunim. V'shama Aviv Shemei Avram Ba And on top of that, they hear that his father comes from Avram. Shenemar lo nasi elokim ata bitochenu. That's how the Bnei Chet deal with him. V'kvar nodalo l'paro gedulato shel Avram Avinu. And Paro knows about, this is, again, this medrash I made reference to earlier, Paro knows still about Paro miyad v'itev b'nei Paro, shehimid parnes hagun al beitov al amo, that he has, in fact, put somebody who was worthy in charge of his house, in charge of his people. So again, Yosef's lineage is more of an issue than perhaps we had ever considered. The Al-Sheikh also plays with how much information would have been come across. V'ayef sheyomer lebeit paro bo'achei Yosef levad, oshim rebo Yosef yizkor lehem ki machru v'yivku. Basically saying, he can't imagine that they would have shared this little piece of information, namely that Yosef's brothers had sold him, because that would really be bad. And he writes at the very end, Masha Ein Kain, Lu Shemumea Michira Lo Yitav Beineim. Had they heard about the sale, they would not have been very pleased. So Yosef is very selective, which, by the way, actually leads us back to the Zohar's point that he would have brought the brothers that he trusted the most, the ones the where you don't see any, you can't discern anything unnatural there, or any kind of, you know, stiffness in the sense that they don't trust one another. So therefore, the Zohar's point, and again, this is just for any of you who ever wondered what it is that I do. So I've read various book reviews now of my new book. Everybody missed one thing that I have done, and that is that I've taken mystical sources and used them in non-mystical ways, and used them to explain the pshat of the text. Over here, I'm not using the Zohar to tell me some kind of mystical insight. I'm using the Zohar to tell me pshat, which means the Zohar's insight that these five that he brought in would be the five that loved him is a great psychological insight, independent of any possible mystical considerations that may be there. Okay? So according to the Zohar, the five would be the Bnei Shifachot, which goes back to the previous class, and probably Binyamin would have been the fifth. So those are the ones that he grew up with, those are the ones you can trust the most, those are the ones that stand in front of Paro, it seems like a most natural relationship. You can just imagine Shimon and Levi, if they were the ones leading the Yehuda, the one who says to sell him. You can just imagine the tension that would be in the room when they're there. So therefore, Yosef, in his wisdom, wants to take that down as much as possible. And as I said, therefore, I think that the Zohar over here may very well be pshat. And you see how the Tzor Hamor also, again, he doesn't go in the exact same way, but similar considerations. Now, let's go to source 15. Over here is when Yosef comes to Paro and he interprets the dream. And there are a couple of stages over here. And let's take a look. This is in, again, the beginning of Miketz Perek Mem Aleph. V'yateyurei Paro ish navon chum v'yishiteo l'eretz Yitzrayim. Paro sees this wise man. Yaseh Paro v'yafkeid p'kid... V'yateyurei Paro ish navon chum v'yishiteo l'eretz Yitzrayim. Yosef tells Paro, find somebody who's capable and put him in charge, which may also tell you something about Paro's incapability. I mean, that itself is a fascinating statement. He doesn't say to Paro, here is the plan, go ahead and implement the plan. What does he say? Paro, my first piece of advice to you, hire a CEO. Right? This is not for you. So maybe that also is interesting. Was this a self-serving statement or not? Which means at this point, is Yosef basically saying, does he think he's in a job interview or not? So not necessarily. So the commentaries debate this point. The Ramban, which I may have, I don't think I have it here. He argues that Yosef was looking for a job. Look at the Chatam Sofer in source 16. Yan ki b'masha amar Yosef, yirei paro ish navon v'cham kiyotze el ha-melech, v'amnam Ramban hisbir shehu me'inyan pitron ha-chalon ayin sham, that's part of the interpretation of the dream. מכל מקום מסיים, החכם עיניו בראשו אמר כדי שיברכו, שיברכו. That the reason he said it was because he wanted the job. ואני אומר, the Chatam Tofer says, שלא עלה על יוסף מעולם שיבחרו אותו עברי אבן מבית העשרים, אלא פתרונו היה באמת ותמים כאשר ראתה אין חכמתו. That he disagrees and he says that Yosef doesn't dream for a second that he's the, you know, it's like maybe Shaul. He goes to the witch and the witch gives in. So is the witch going to get a job now? No. Somebody sneaks off to in the middle of the night, gets a little bit of insight, and then, you know, it's over. Paro hears that there's a guy who can read dreams, right? So he's going to, you know, tell him the dream. Which is according to this, Yosef doesn't imagine coming from prison, being somebody of no lineage, being a stranger, being a heretic, all the things that you want, Yosef doesn't imagine for a second that he's in a job interview. So as I said, this point is debated by the commentaries. Go back to source 15. Good. He has a limited. He has a limited interest. So the question is, how much is he really, as I said, how much is he on a job interview or not? Marion? Right. Correct. By the way, in the Ramban, for him, the dreams are the main thing all the way through. And there is an intersection of the dreams, and therefore these dreams of Paro can help his dreams come true, and that is definitely going to be part of the motivation of the Ramban. The dreams are the thing, yes. Okay, as I said, I can accept either way. I'm just pointing out that already the commentaries debate on this point. Continue. He says, appoint somebody. Pasuk Lamed Hay is gather all the food during the good years, all under Paro's ownership. And then verse 37 says, Vayitav hadavar b'nei Paro v'nei kol avadav. That was the thing which was liked by Paro and all of his servants. Do you know what's not here yet? What's not here? At this juncture, what's not here? Okay, what is here at this point? The plan is here. Oh, he is not appointed yet. That's not the point that everybody liked. The next verse says, after this, Pasuk Lamed Chet then says, Vayomer Paro el avadav hanimtza kazeh ish asher ruach elokim bo. The next pasuk is when Yosef gets the job, which means Yosef getting the job is not something that was loved and approved by all of Pharaoh's servants. And therefore, again, that point of the Tzoramar of the kol versus kol avadav versus just avadav, it's even sharper than we thought that he said it. Because over here at this point, it wasn't that Yosef had a 100% approval rating. Yosef's not part of the story right now. All that Yosef is the analyst. Again, he's the advisor who comes in, one-time basis, gives a dream interpretation, goes a little bit further, and not only gives an interpretation, but gives a plan about how to go about implementing to take advantage of the information that they have. And that everybody loves. Why does everybody love it? Because now you're talking about economically. Again, in every way, everybody here is going to gain. People in position of power will have that much more power. People have the money. The rich will become richer, right? The 1% will now be able to control literally. This is the one. This is really the 1%, the 99%. It's over here, and that they love. And then something happens in the next verse. The next verse, Paro then says, "Well, is there anybody else who has so much insight?" Vayom Paro Yosef achrei odia elokim otchat kol azot ein navon v'chacham kamocha. There's nobody who is as smart as you. Now at this point, Paro is knocking down all the other advisors. Over here it doesn't say, that cannot be said over here. Atatiyeh al beiti. And again, if you're filming this right now, can you tell me the looks of the faces of all the senior advisors right now? Now they're shocked out of their minds. They can't believe it. Atatiyeh al beiti ve'al picha. Yishak Kol Ami, based on you people, right? Raka Kisei Egdal Mimecha, the only Mimecha, the only one more powerful than you will be me. The Yom Paro Yosei for Einatat Yitchal Kol Eretz Mitzrayim. The Yasar Paro Utabato Me Al Yado V'Yitain Otal Yad Yosef. He takes his royal ring and he gives it to him. What does that remind you of? Yeah, yeah. And Megillat Esther was written deliberately. I've said this to you before. It was written deliberately with the story of Yosef as the background, as the backdrop of it. There are numerous linguistic and thematic connections between these two stories. Over here, he takes off the ring and gives it to Yosef. Yosef is in charge, which also tells you a little bit like what Achashverosh is like and what Paro is like. There's, again, they have other things that concern them. Now, let's pay very careful attention to what else he does. Vayobeshoto bigdei shesh. Vayasem rivid hazahav al tzavaro. So now he is... Yosef's clothing was already changed. When he got pulled out of the pit, did you hear me quote that pasuk on Shabbos? It's fancy clothing. Ah, now you know. I said that there was nothing last week's parsha about reference to the wedding that was coming up. I said, other than they pulled him out of a pit, they gave him a haircut, they put nice clothing on him. I says, it sounds like a yeshiva bacher getting ready for a wedding. Okay. What? No, I was speaking by the offer. But now he gets royal clothing. Vayarkev oto b'merkevet ha-mishneh Asher lo, and he is given a royal, again, the second in charge, second in command, in terms of the fleet, Asher lo, v'yikru lefanav avrech. Now this is the avrech, this means the father to Paro. Again, there's various commentaries, but from the other reference and the way that Torah more juxtaposed them, he becomes like a father to Paro. V'natan oto akol eretz Mitzrayim, and he puts in charge of all of Egypt. And then he continues, "Vayomer Paro Yosef, ani Paro," which probably didn't need to be told. "Bil adecha lo yerim ish et yadov et raglo b'chol eretz Mitzrayim." Again, you are absolutely in charge. "Vayikra Paro Shem Yosef, sofnat paneach." He renames him, which means he now receives a new identity. He's no longer going to be known as Yosef. Now he's sofnat paneach. Well, in Hebrew, it means the revealer of secrets. V'yitain lo et osnat bat potifera kohen on li'isha. Now, explain that to me. Almost all the commentaries that I looked up on this give us all kinds of reasons why Yosef chose to marry her, which is all wonderful except for one problem. It doesn't say that Yosef chose to marry her. What does it say? V'yitain lo et osnat bat potifera kohen on li'isha. Why? First of all, we know that the Kohanim have power. He's making a royal wedding over here. Yosef, again, this is part of the new identity which is being given to Yosef. The name is changed, the clothing is changed, he has the royal fleet, he now is marrying for power. Again, and this is Paro's doing. This is not that Yosef goes and finds her. And I'm telling you, all the commentaries deal with how Yosef chose to marry and why, and there's these midrashim that she's really the daughter of Dina, right, who is outcast and so on and so forth.
It's also to show that he didn't really do anything wrong in that household.
Look at look at source 19. Look at source... Okay. So in order to help you on this, there is a difference of opinion whether Potiphera and Potiphar is the same or two different people. Come on, if it's the same or it's different?
It's the same.
Then if it's the same, then why is he called there Potiphar? And here it's Potiphera. And there he's described as Kohen On, and there he's not described as Kohen On. And what does Kohen mean? Is Kohen, see, if you go back to the point of heresy, and see, Kohen could mean a man of power, or it could be a man of religion. If it is a man of religion, then it's also fascinating because Yosef is the heretic and he is the outsider, different belief system. So what does he do? Again, this is a very clever thing on power. Meaning, power knows politics. Politics he understands. No. But Paro understands how certain things need to look. Which means he needs the right clothing, he needs the right car, he needs the right wife. And all of this over here will help Paro because it will make Paro's advisor being the son-in-law of this powerful man. That politically is a very wise thing to do. But look at the Meshiv Nefesh. He makes it even sharper in Source 19. Ve'itein lo et osnat bat Potiphar, pirish Rashi shepotiphera hu Potiphar. He says it's the same guy. What difference does it make who he married? It's coming to tell us. Which means, to translate and to explain, he's saying it's specifically the person who used to own him as a slave that now there's a royal wedding taking place and he's going to give his daughter. That means that the status of Yosef is not the status of a slave. Which means if even someone's going to come back and say, oh, wasn't Yosef the slave for Potiphar? So what are you talking about? Say, he married his daughter off to him. Which means either, again, I'm going a little bit against what, not exactly the way that he said it. He wants to say that if somebody says, oh, isn't he the slave? No, he's no longer the slave. I'm saying it's even better than that. You can say, no, what are you talking about, the slave? A man, illustrious man like Potiphar, would not give his daughter to somebody who's a slave. I mean, it becomes an absurdity. But I'm saying all of this is part of the cover-up. This whole thing is part of the cover-up as to who Yosef is. And the one who put him in prison as well, which means that this then becomes, again, politically a very clever move in order to establish who Yosef is, and ultimately, who's the one who's going to gain the most if Yosef is established as having proper lineage, and Paro is the one who gains the most, because Paro is the one who stands to lose the most. Who are the ones who are most upset? So the ones who are most upset are all the other advisors. Now, the Sforno brings in one more consideration. Before I read this Sforno, I'll tell you about another Sforno that is worthwhile considering. Because, again, somebody asked before, why didn't the brothers know this? The brothers come in, and why do they know that it's Yosef? And you know, all along the way, it's very strange. But now you realize that most likely there is a really strong... I'm not going to say that Yosef's under witness protection, but it's real close. There is an absolute cover-up over here as to who Yosef is in terms of the country, who Yosef is. As far as the royals or the royal house or the royal advisors, they still know who he is, and that's where the Lashon Hara is. It's interesting that when Yosef's brothers come, what is the first thing he says to them? The first thing he says to them, they come, and what does he say? You're spies. Which is almost an impossible dialogue that takes place. It's very self-serving, but read my book because I explained it over there what the dialogue is. But I'll say something different that I didn't say there, or maybe only in a footnote. Sforno says the reason why he says they're spies is a preemptive strike. Because by accusing them of being spies, what can't they now do? They can't start asking questions about him. Because they start asking questions about him, then he'll say, oh, see, you're spies. So the whole thing is preemptive. Why is it preemptive? To avoid the problem of them starting to ask, who's this Sofnat Paneach, and how did he get to the position of power, and where did he come from, background information on him. Once they're accused of being spies, they can't start asking about him, because then it would confirm that they're spies. So according to him, that's the whole thing going on over here. The whole thing, right? It's very clever. Do you? Yes? It's very clever. So he says that's what they're doing. But let's take a look what the Sforno says here, because he has a whole other consideration as to something else that we didn't necessarily think about, but it will go into the whole theme of the eventual anti-Semitism and slavery that will come in. Source 20, the Yetev Be'enei Paro, and Paro was happy. Why was Paro happy? Shechashav, he thought, Shemikan Ve'elech, Tiyeh hashkachat Yosef al haaretz, lo kashkachat ger manhig, aval ki hashkachat ezrak choshev l'shevet ba'aretzu, v'zaro u'lezeh yashkiach b'chol lev lahativ la'aretz u'liyoshveha. Translate? That the reason Paro was happy that Yosef's family was now coming, because then he thought that Yosef will now take his job more seriously and not treat it as a stranger who happens to be visiting in this land, but rather as a citizen of the land who has something personally invested in it. And now he will do his job with all of his heart and all of his soul. Now, we have no reason to believe that Paro had any thoughts that Yosef wasn't doing it with all his heart and all his soul. But what does it come down to? That there's still a level of distrust. Even with Paro, who has the highest level of concern and the highest level of trust, there's still an issue that Yosef is a stranger. Yosef is different. And when Yosef's family will arrive, so that then sinks his roots a little bit deeper. And the truth is, this is somewhat reminiscent of Lavan. Lavan was incredibly blessed by Yaakov Avinu being in his land and taking care of his things. Again, just think about it. There's just a direct parallel between Yaakov and Yosef. Where they arrive, there is this blessing. And all, by the way, the same thing happens by Yitzchak. The Mea Shearim and so on. Right? Mea Shearim from the Torah. Right? There is this incredible blessing that when any of them come to a place in terms of the produce and what takes place, and he's concerned because Yosef is not really a part of things. Still, the court Jew is still a stranger. The court Jew is very good at what he does, but ultimately, can we really trust him or not? And now, let's go back and keep in mind what Yosef does at the end. Yosef brings his brothers, but we're settled in Goshen. We're here, but we're not really here. We're a part of you, but we're not part of you. And what Yosef did over here, in terms of politics, was not clever. Because in terms of politics, with Paro's concerns, who is this Yosef? He's not part of us. But now Yosef has the perfect opportunity to become a part of the Egyptian culture. You know, his brothers can live in the capital and they can be by all the parties and all the lectures and all the openings of the museums and the openings of the pyramids and whatever else we may have. But he chooses not to do that. Because what Yosef does at this stage, it's not because Yosef isn't clever. Yosef is clever. But Yosef at this point puts the interests of his brothers and their children and their grandchildren over his own personal political concerns. Because for them to survive, they will need to be a separate people. For them to survive this exile, they can't assimilate and live together in the capital with everyone else, because then very, very quickly they will intermarry with the elite, which is exactly what Paro wants to happen. But that's not what happens. Which means here we see again that Yosef's decision to separate them will eventually lead from this, can we not trust this palace Jew, to eventually, how could we deal with this minority, which is on the side, who may one day take over? Which means all that's going to happen because of what, again, it's again Yosef seeing 20 steps down the line. But the alternative is one which is impossible. Because the alternative is one of assimilation and disappearing. And that's something that Yosef is not going to allow. Which means that even though that Yosef is going to be able to exist and even thrive undercover with an assumed identity in the palace, and married into their people, married into the priesthood, and everything about it, Yosef is able to survive. Yosef realizes that that's not a wonderful plan for the entire population, and therefore he's very, very careful with Paro over here along the way. As I said, in terms of his immediate concerns, he could have played this differently, but he doesn't. And over here, you have a very clear sense of Yosef putting the needs of his brothers over his own needs, and that, I think, is an incredible conclusion to the Yosef story. Shabbat Shalom.